Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 16th of June.
Hello, I'm Kathleen.
And we have all things political, as we always do on Mondays at 9. And very happy to have an old friend of mine, actually, on the show today, who is a wonderful journalist, Mike Goucher, Distinguished Fellow in Law and Public Policy at Marquette University. He's contributing anchor and reporter for WISN Television in Milwaukee, the host of the weekly Sunday morning program, Up Front with Mike Goucher. He was a longtime anchor for another television station in Milwaukee, moderator of presidential debates himself. Some of you may have seen the 2004 Democratic presidential debate that took place at Marquette University that Mike moderated. And he's considered to be, for many years now, with great justification, one of the best journalists in the state of Wisconsin. We have a lot to talk about, a big presidential year. We'll talk about whether or not Clinton voters are coming back to the Democratic Party. Well, look at this phenomenal poll that was released in Wisconsin showing Obama way ahead of McCain, even though this is supposed to be a swing state. We're going to talk about the state of journalism, the issues that the candidates are covering, and a number of other issues as well. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. And if you would like to send an email, that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Hello, Mike. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's great to see you, Kathleen.
Yeah, great to see you. You, at the end of the show yesterday, talked about Tim Russert, saying that we had lost one of the very best in journalism, and I know you had a chance to interview him. Tell me about the interview, and I just feel his loss so much now because I used to listen to him and respect his thoughts. There are certain people you listen to. I listen to Tim Russert.
Right. I was extremely sad when I heard the news on Friday afternoon, and I tried to think why I was so sad, and I had the good fortune of interviewing Tim Russert on two different occasions for the Sunday night show that we used to do. And I can't say that I was a close friend of his, but what I can say is that he was a remarkably charming guy, extremely gregarious, and just wonderfully interested in politics. He just loved it. He lived for it. During commercial breaks in the show, we would talk inside Wisconsin politics. You know, we'd go back back in 1976 or 1980, and he knew the landscape of Wisconsin politics from
Great.
That time. So he was a political junkie. He lived for it. I said there is a sad irony in the fact that he passed away during such an enormous election year, and also a sad irony in the fact that he passed away right before Father's Day.
Yes,
because as you know, he wrote often about his father and very fondly of his father, Big Russ, and which brings me to a quick little story. If you have just a moment,
we have many moments.
Okay,
that's
well,
the
good
thing about public radio.
Well, I'll make it a little longer then, but I think it kind of captured the essence of Tim Russert. He was in town to promote his book, Big Russ and Me. And so he came by the station. This was the second time I'd interviewed him. And so we had a really good time. And we, after the show, we were kind of comparing notes on fathers. His father, man of his generation, my dad, much the same way. And so we had this great visit. And at the end of that visit, right before he left, he said, "Hey, would you like me to sign a book to your dad?" It was shortly before Father's Day. And he said, "I'll autograph it for him." I said, "That would be wonderful. What a great gift." And so he did that. And then he said, "Would you like me to sign a book for you, too?" And I said, "Well, that'd be wonderful, Tim. I really appreciate that. It's not necessary, but no, that's fine." So he signs it, and he signed it, and it was something to the effect of, to Mike, a great interviewer and a great dad. And I didn't say anything, and as you know, my wife and I, we don't have kids, but I didn't say anything. It was a little one of those moments. It was so kind of him to sign it, and so before he walks out the door, he says to me, "Mike, how many kids do you and your wife have?" And I said, "Well, actually, Tim, we don't have any kids." "Well, I didn't mean to sign the book. I'm sorry about that. I shouldn't have put that in the book. I feel terrible about that." And I said, "Don't feel terrible about it. I've got this great gift for my father. Everything's wonderful." So a week later, I get a package in the mail in the newsroom. It's from Tim Russert. Here's a new copy of the book. New autograph on it. New personal message and a personal note with it. Just saying how much he enjoyed the visit to Milwaukee, how much he enjoyed having the time to catch up, and that he hoped that we would work together again in the future. And I thought, you know, that said a lot about who he was. he was someone who was a hard charger, very driven, loved politics, was not going to be beaten on a story, but he had this wonderfully warm, personal side. And I think that's what I found most interesting about all the tributes, were that people respected him as a journalist, but truly loved him as a friend and as a colleague.
Yeah. And people get so wrapped up in this work, and there are a lot of egos, as you know, involved with this. I was amazed at the stories of he remembered all our children. He knew their names. He asked about them. He was my child's godfather. He was just – and what he did for you, isn't that a story? Isn't that remarkable?
It is. It's something you would never expect from somebody who has so many responsibilities. And people forget he was not just the moderator of Meet the Press. That would be a full job in itself. But he ran their Washington Bureau. Yeah. He was a major decision maker in the day-to-day of Washington.
Right.
So, I mean, he was an extraordinarily busy guy to take that time to do something like that. It said a lot about him.
Yeah. I love what was said about him, and I wonder if you've had somebody like this in your life, that his cheapest and most accurate focus group was his father, that he touched with his father. And I lost my father last year, and I used to do the same thing. I'd call because Dad was right on with what was going on politically and had this long life experience. And I would talk to him all the time about, what do you think, Dad? What do you think, Dad? And I wonder how many broadcasters do that, that have that touch with reality, touch with, you know, the guy from Buffalo, my dad, who was a good guy.
I think you need a barometer like that, and whether it's your dad, as it was in your case, and in Tim's case, or whether it's another family member, or whether it's just friends who are in a completely different world than the one you live in day to day. I think one of the dangers for people who do what we do for a living is we become very insular. We become people who tend to socialize with other people who do the same thing for a living, and I think you can, if you're not careful, you can lose touch with what people out there are thinking on an everyday basis as they go about their lives. They are not necessarily in the same place as we are in terms of how they view the world. And that's always healthy. So I think he said that was the cheapest and best focus group he could have, is calling Big Russ on the phone in Buffalo. And he said the kiss of death from Big Russ was if he said, "You're a phony."
Right.
If he saw a guest on the show, listened to him for an hour and said, "He's a phony."
Right.
That was the kiss of death.
The other thing that was sad to me, Mike, is I listened to him because I respected what he had to say. And I'm thinking of the few journalists who I can probably count on maybe both hands, maybe 10 or so, who have the insight, who have the passion for politics, who have the passion for what the world issues are. How much darn fluff there is these days and no news. And I'm wondering how in the world we reach that point.
I'm not sure. I think it's and I'll preface it by saying this. When you go back to September 11th, I always think of that date as the date where we all came together as a nation. And in our profession, we said we live in serious times and we need to be more serious about our approach to news.
Yes.
And now, fast forward 7 years, and have we really become that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure sometimes. I think that there's a belief that to sell a product right now, it has to be entertaining, it has to be less than serious, that serious translates into boring. And I think the one thing that will be missed because of Tim Russert's untimely passing, I think, is that he made politics sort of cool again.
Right.
I mean, I think he had such a commitment, and he was so excited about it, and he was so wonderfully impressed by our imperfect democracy. And I thought the fact that he felt so passionately about it, in some ways I think that translated into how people felt about it. And so when you lose somebody like that, I think you lose someone who brings an awful lot to the table. But back to your point, I just think for whatever reason – there just became this belief that you had to either sex it up, make it softer, make it more entertaining. The people just weren't interested in how their tax dollars were spent, or how this political figure voted, or stance on a particular issue. And I never really believed that, and I still think people are interested. You have to find ways to engage.
Right.
But I still think they're interested.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure exactly how we got to this point. And I guess I'd say I'm a little disappointed at times that we're sort of, in my opinion, back to where we were prior. to 9/11, that we've sort of forgotten some of those lessons.
Right. Except for this race. By golly, this is a fascinating political race. I watch every moment, and I even watch the junk stuff, all the commentators talk, because I find it so darned interesting. All the young people who have become involved, who are so excited about this race, there's something a little different about this year, don't you think?
I agree. And if you look at the turnout in the various primaries, that would definitely confirm your belief. Yeah, I think you're seeing something that's very interesting and somewhat unique this year. I mean, let's face it; it is a history-making election.
Mm-hmm.
Would have been had Hillary Clinton been the nominee, and is because Barack Obama is the presumptive nominee. So you have history being made, and I think sometimes, and you and I were talking before the show, sometimes it's hard for I think people who may be in their teens or their 20s and to think that this is quite as big as it is. But for those of us who, you know, remember that the 1960s were not all that long ago, it is a big deal.
Right.
To have a woman running for president, a serious candidate, and to have an African-American running for president.
How do you think he did it? Here is a guy who didn't have a whole lot of experience, who had, I think, a phenomenal organization, absolutely phenomenal, and still does for the presidential race. Was it that, or was it the way he spoke, the crowds that he gathered? Yeah. How did he defeat the Clintons?
I think you hit on a key factor, and I think there are several. His campaign organization, people I've talked to, have described it as ruthlessly efficient.
Mm.
And they mean that as a compliment. There was very little infighting within his campaign as opposed to the Clinton campaign. Where there were still grudges being carried out from, you know, years ago in the Clinton administration, people who were involved in that campaign. So I think his campaign was extremely efficient. I think he was a fresh face to most Americans and sort of for a lot of Americans symbolized a changing nation. Our nation looks a little different today than it did 40 or 50 years ago. So I think that was appealing. And he has talked about this in his speeches about whether words matter. I do think there was part of that for him. He is a tremendously eloquent speaker. He gives a great speech. And I think, you know, many Americans want to be inspired in today's world. Now, there are some people who say, well, let's look at his positions on the issues, and we'll see a lot more of that in the coming months. And let's see if the words are matched by actions. And that's the challenge he'll face, is to convince people he's ready for the job now. But I think it's a combination of factors. Mm-hmm. And I think the Clintons, and I don't profess to be someone who was on the day-to-day campaign trail with the Clintons, but I think there were a number of missteps, and probably the biggest one was the belief that this race would be over so early and that there are just certain things they didn't have to do. And they didn't plan beyond early February, Super Tuesday. And frankly, I think they didn't look at doing things that they had to do, for example, organizing for the caucuses. They sort of ignored that. Mm-hmm. And that really came back to bite them in a big, big way.
Let's talk about the poll that you were talking about on your show yesterday, which I found really surprising. The really big lead that Obama has in Wisconsin right now, considered a swing state, supposedly very close. It's not close right now. Is it way too early? Could it really get much closer as the months go on? But why is it so large now?
Well, I think there are a couple of explanations for that. I talked to Ken Goldstein, a UW-Madison political scientist who was involved in doing the polling. Along with wispolitics.com. Professor Goldstein believes that part of that margin is a post-Hillary Clinton endorsement bump, that they went into the field a little over a week ago. So they went into the field starting on a Sunday. She had announced that she was endorsing Obama on a Saturday. And so he thinks there's a little bit of that involved in it, which would help create the margin. He does think that the race will tighten up. And past elections would seem to indicate that Wisconsin is a state where it should be in play. I mean, if you're talking 6,000 votes with the Gore Bush election in 2000, and I think the Kerry Bush election was, I think, 11,000 votes. I mean, those are very small margins in a state our size. So I think there's historic evidence that it will be closer. But the one thing that Ken Goldstein said that I found very interesting, he said it's really the headline from the poll in his mind, is how people in Wisconsin view themselves right now. And it used to be that it was a third and a third and a third.
Yeah.
Democrats, Republicans, Independents. Right now, that's not the case. Hmm. Right now, considerably more people identify themselves as Democrats than Republicans. And that is what has changed. And he thinks that's what's playing into the margin that they saw in that poll. Could that change? Sure, it could change. Are some of the people out there potentially the Reagan Democrats who, while they're not necessarily happy with the way things are today, could they come back into the Republican camp? Absolutely. So I think the feeling is it will get closer. And most people I've talked to still believe this is something of a purple state, not necessarily red, not necessarily blue. But it was a surprising margin, and even the pollsters were surprised by the margin.
Mm-hmm. The Democratic Convention had a straw poll. The numbers were 49% or 49 voters said that it should be Clinton, 44 Richardson, 34 Edwards, 32 Webb, 27 Wesley Clark. What, you know, we keep talking about this. It's getting old, but do you think there's any chance that he would put her on as vice president? And why do you think people at the convention wanted her in Wisconsin in the number two slot?
Well, I think she has some very committed supporters, people who felt very strongly about her candidacy, who probably, if you were asked them honestly today, they still believe she was the better qualified
right.
candidate. And I think that you're seeing that reflected in those numbers. And many people who feel that she would be a tremendous asset to an Obama-headed ticket. But to answer your question, the poll that was done last week does not suggest that adding Hillary Clinton to the ticket would be of great benefit to Obama. They asked a very specific question about that, and it really didn't seem to make any difference. It didn't necessarily boost his numbers in Wisconsin. It didn't necessarily hurt him either, but it didn't make much difference, which might surprise a few people. So I think he's in an interesting position right now. He has to decide what's the best way to move forward. I think there are some people who feel that he needs to demonstrate his independence right now, and that adding her to the ticket might send mixed signals to some of his supporters and some of the independents who have taken a liking to him. So those are all things he's going to have to decide, and it'll be interesting. But there's definitely a part of the party. I mean, we saw the one delegate who said she's now going to vote for John McCain.
Right.
So there is – people tend to kind of poo-poo it and say, oh, Democrats will come into the fold. But there are some people out there who are not happy about that, the way the campaign turned out, and just feel – she was not treated fairly.
Yeah. But there are also an enormous number of people who are not happy with the way the country is going. And I wonder how that's going to figure. The oil prices, the war in Iraq. People are just not happy, and understandably so. Their wages aren't great. Health care is in crisis, et cetera, which seems to me as though it bodes well for the Democrats this year.
I think it's the message of change.
Right.
And the poll, again, suggests – I think the number was 8 out of 10 – Americans or Wisconsin residents polled said they thought the country was headed in the wrong direction. That's a tough thing if you're a Republican right now, because you're the party, you're perceived to be the party in power, and I think that's a tough situation for Republicans. The feeling that I get and from talking to political insiders, they believe that there is a candidate who can overcome that problem that the Republicans face. It is John McCain, because they do believe he has, over the years, distanced himself enough from certain Republican positions, has at times even tweaked his own party. They believe he might have that appeal, and he could possibly rise above that. But when you look at a lot of these numbers, people who are dissatisfied with the economy or dissatisfied with the war or gas prices, is that John McCain's fault? No, no more so than it's Barack Obama's fault. But it's the party in power. They perceive it as this is, you know, it's the Bush administration was, you know, in the White House, and look at what happened to gas prices. And John McCain, because he's the Republican candidate, for some reason people want to draw
right.
that connection. So,
and what about the war, Mike? Obama was making reference this past week in Wisconsin to $10 to $12 billion a month. That's a heck of a lot of money, $10 to $12 billion a month. And yet, Iraq has receded from the front pages of the newspaper. We're not talking about it as much. Is it still a huge issue, and can Obama press on that? You know, instead of 10 to 12 in Iraq, we could be doing 10 to 12 to look for alternatives to oil for energy. We could be making sure that our schools are great, et cetera. Does that resonate with people, or are we sick of Iraq?
Well, I think the polling would suggest people are sick of it, that there is war fatigue. And even people who support the war want it to end soon and want the troops to come home soon. But I think that's a huge wild card issue in this race. Well, I think there is a fatigue out there. It's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. If there is political progress in Iraq over the next 6 months or so, John McCain may benefit from that. He may say, look, violence in Iraq is down. The Iraqi military is beginning to make inroads. Most objective observers who have gone to Iraq seem to feel that militarily, yes, there has been significant progress. The question is political progress being made? And that's still, I think, a question that has yet to be answered. So to me, so much of this depends on what happens in the next few months. But I do believe that the Obama camp has tapped into the sentiment that we're tired of the war,
mm-hmm.
and people want the troops to come home, and they'd like to see us not there any longer than we have to be.
Yeah. Mike Gushue is our guest for All Things Political this morning. We have a lot of phone calls already come in, and we have room for one more, so grab it if you want. Mike is now Distinguished Fellow in Law. That's a good title, isn't it? Distinguished Fellow in Law and Public Policy at Marquette.
I tell my friends that what the title is, and they say it's pretty fancy for a guy who's worn makeup and read out loud for most of his adult life. So yeah.
He's also a contributing anchor and reporter for WSI, WISN Television in Milwaukee, the host of the weekly Sunday morning program Upfront with Mike Gushue. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. And in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050. If you would like to send us an email, that would be great. It's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, we'll be looking at a study that shows that the U.S. commercial aviation industry is in full-blown crisis and heading toward a catastrophe. Most of this, of course, due to record oil prices. So that's coming up the second hour of our show this Monday. Mike Gushue is with us now. We go to phone calls at 800-486-8655. And Tim from Sparta, our first caller. Hi, Tim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to make a comment on Tim Rush. I thought that he was one of very few journalists out there that did a good job. What I liked about him was that he, unlike like Larry King or you know some of the other journalists out there, he wasn't scared to ask tough questions regardless of political party, and he didn't buy into the MoveOn.org haters that, you know, just hate Republicans or hate Bush and like CNBC and Keith Olbermann and Chris Matthews that you know just like Obama headquarters. Tim was he asked the tough questions, but he always showed respect for the president and respect for his guests. And, you know, he didn't give the Democrats a free pass. He didn't give the Republicans a free pass. And I really think, you know, as in journalism today, that's a huge concern because I just see the mainstream media as being so slanted towards Obama.
Okay, thanks, Tim, for the call. Would you agree with that? There's been a lot written that the press was just much too nice to Obama.
I think it's interesting. I tend to think what you saw was the press's treatment of both Obama and Clinton depended on who was the front runner, the perceived front runner.
Mm.
I think that Obama probably initially, yes, I think some of the press coverage, frankly, was a bit gushing. To be honest, when people are talking about having a chill down their spine when they hear a speech or talking about the thrills and even stories about reporters bringing their kids to Obama rallies so they could see for themselves what this guy was all about. That's a little probably not what you would expect from a hardened group of reporters.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think, and I'll just say this, my personal opinion, I was somewhat surprised by, for example, MSNBC's coverage during the primary campaign. I thought some of the comments about Hillary Clinton were out of line.
Hmm.
I mean, I understand we're now in this new age of opinion slash news slash whatever. But I was just surprised at some of the comments that were made, and I think they did sound borderline sexist.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not borderline, they sounded sexist. And so that troubled me a little bit. So I think that some of her folks, they probably are entitled to feel the way they do about certain aspects of the campaign. I think that's changing, and I think it's changing now because Obama is going to be the Democratic nominee, barring some unforeseen circumstance at the convention. But he's going to be the person, and he will be scrutinized in a way that, while it's probably been fairly intense lately, it's nothing like what will come in the coming months. So I think that will come with the territory, and it comes with the status of being the perceived front runner.
Mm-hmm.
Up until, I think, you know, early February, I still think there was this belief that Clinton would ultimately pull this out. But when that didn't happen, I think things changed. And interestingly, it wasn't long after that the Jeremiah Wright tape surfaced. And so it's interesting. One thing about Tim Russert, I'm sort of an old school guy on this front. I agree with the caller completely in terms of Russert's ability to question both Republicans and Democrats in a respectful way,
mm-hmm.
but to challenge. And I've always believed that you can ask tough questions, but you can do it with some degree of politeness and civility.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he felt strongly about that his show would not be one where there was a back-and-forth screaming match, whoever could talk the loudest, the longest one.
Mm-hmm.
That would not be his show. And so to me, he epitomized what a good journalist does, and that is you prepare, you anticipate responses, and don't be afraid to follow up if you don't get an answer.
Right.
But you have to listen. And I thought Russert was a great listener.
Yes.
And that's so, as you know, that is so often overlooked in this business. People do not listen carefully for that change in nuance or that change in position. And he did that very, very well.
Yeah. And also, as people said, which you assume is just part of your job, is that he studied for his job. He thought it was a part of the American historical record, which it was. I mean, it certainly was. Those interviews will be watched for years and years. He took it very seriously.
Absolutely.
Which was good. I mean, that's what people in journalism want to do. It's an important job.
Absolutely. And you could learn a lot of lessons from him. Over the years, I've done a number of political debates, governor's races and Senate races and presidential debates, and where you're the one person asking the questions.
Mm-hmm.
You need to do just as much homework as humanly possible, but you need to be able to anticipate and to listen so closely, because people will change their positions and politicians will sort of – they'll give you a new take on something.
Right.
And unless you're listening carefully, you'll miss it.
Right.
And so he did it the right way as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Tim, for the call. Jim from Milwaukee is next. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I'd like to say, give some ideas to network nationally on foreign policy issues, and the theme is it's the incompetent stupid. Because, it doesn't matter whether they were morally incompetent by lying us into war or whether they were just intellectually incompetent in terms of coming up with a poor analysis of consequences. It's craziness to say that we should support the failed policies of the people that had the failed policies of the past, that we should rely on them to protect us in the future. And, McCain had a lot of experience in the Senate, and Daddy Bush was head of the CIA and was in three administrations, but none of this helped them make appropriate decisions. And a good example of their incompetence was in the Chicago Tribune over the either Friday or Saturday in the World section. It said, Iraq has rejected allowing unilateral U.S. authority to conduct military operations and control nearly 60 bases to arrest and detain Iraqi citizens, and that other provisions we would have controlled their airspace and immunity to U.S. Troops and civilians, contractors from Iraqi laws and prosecution. We wouldn't tolerate this for America. And so quite naturally, no matter what we do there, they're still going to resist us because we wouldn't accept those kind of conditions over us, so why would we expect the Iraqis to accept these conditions, and why wouldn't they continue to resist us while we're there, and why wouldn't we continue to incur the costs?
Mike?
Well, I think that issues of this kind, I believe, actually will be front and center in, mm-hmm. in the campaign. Mm-hmm. I think because, first of all, you have John McCain's going to, I believe, wage a campaign that is based heavily on the idea that he is the more experienced candidate, that he understands these huge issues that face us around the world. So I think you will hear considerable discussion of that. For example, his discussion of, you know, our role in Iraq well into the future. And I think you will hear two very contrasting positions
very
on that.
Very contrasting.
And it will be up to voters in this country to decide who they want to entrust the future of this country to, and ultimately what our policy will be in Iraq. I think that will be a big issue. I actually think Iran will be a big issue. These may not show up on public opinion polls as top of mind issues. I think top of mind issues you're going to see again and again, the economy. You'll see health care emerge as it always does. And then I think Iraq is right there too. But I do think some of these issues about what our foreign policy will be, what our role in the world will be, will be part of the campaign, because I just have this feeling that's going to be just perhaps the greatest area of disagreement. There'll be serious disagreements on tax issues and on economic issues. But I think on foreign policy, you will hear two very different visions mm-hmm. of where the U.S. should be in the coming years. So, interesting comments.
And what do you think about the coverage of Iraq? I've heard from so many journalists that they have to rely on Iraqi reporters who are willing to risk the danger in a very dangerous country, that it's virtually impossible to figure out exactly what's going on in the country because you stand such a good chance of getting killed, for heaven's sake. Mm-hmm. And there aren't that many people who speak the language, and it just sounds like it's an incredibly complicated situation to cover. And so our need to find out the truth is hampered because aren't there any people who can tell us what the truth is?
I think it was particularly difficult two or three years ago where I think it was extraordinarily dangerous for mm-hmm. Western reporters to be in the field. And I think now it's a little bit better, and I think you see that reflected in network newscasts and cable newscasts. You're seeing people in the field on a more regular basis, and I think they get a little better handle on how things are going. But that's, I think, one of the great challenges anytime you're in a wartime situation is how do you tell the truth when it's hard to get access
right.
to the truth?
Right.
And this is a sort of a different conflict for us in that sense, where everything is fair game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's been a big challenge. I'm sure anybody at a network level, anybody in a correspondent's job would tell you that's been an incredible challenge for them with this
yeah.
war.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Mike from Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to make a prediction, and then I'd like a follow-up once the guest gives his opinion. A couple of things. First, that, you know, always expect the unexpected, and unfortunately history repeats itself. And I think that there may be something coming down the pike that is obviously going to have a huge impact on the U.S. elections, and this is the following. I think that if Israel perceives that Obama's going to win, they're going to feel that they're in a very weakened position. They have this looming threat hanging over their head from Iran. They don't have the aircraft capability to carry a sufficient payload of conventional weapons, so they'll probably attack Iran, attack their facilities. They'll probably use tactical nukes, and then what?
And what indications do you have that Israel is about to do that?
Well, they've done it twice in the past.
Do you imagine there would be something, and people talk about this all the time, that we're going to attack Iran, that Bush will do this as the last act of his presidency, or Israel will do something? I don't know how you get at the truth of that situation either, but something that will totally upset the election.
I certainly have no idea of whether either of those scenarios is possible. I guess they're possible, but I think the again, I think we live in very uncertain times, and I think that's in many respects, and I'll take it back to the presidential election, I think that's the wild card in this election. It's not so much gas prices. It's not so much the economy. It's foreign policy, and it is what can happen in a world that is, as I said, very uncertain. And so we'll see what happens on those matters. I don't know. I hesitate to jump into the into the questioner's premise and say this is going to happen.
Yeah, you don't know.
I really have no way of knowing that.
Thanks for the call. We have a couple lines open if you're trying to join us. It's 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. A question, Mike, from Judy from Milwaukee. Do you have any thoughts about a possible replacement for Tim Russert? I so look forward to Sunday mornings and his extraordinary interviews. Nobody comes close.
Thanks for the question, Judy. I think that if I were a betting person, I would say David Gregory.
Do you think so?
Would be the odds-on favorite for that job. I think NBC has a couple of options. They could go outside of the organization and bring in someone who has a great deal of stature and name. I'm not sure who that person would be. Or I think they can stay in-house, as they say. And I think David Gregory has filled in for Tim Russert in the past. He has his own show on MSNBC now, former White House correspondent. I think he's sort of being groomed as someone who could do this. So that would be my guess if they were going to make a selection. I think it'd be somebody like a David Gregory. I guess it's possible they could do something in the interim. They could even have Brokaw do it, although he says he's retired. But
he's all over still.
Seems to be working harder than ever.
I know.
But I think ultimately, if I were a betting person, I'd say David Gregory.
Yeah. It would be nice. And they don't find enough people. There's a uniqueness about Russert. You don't find many guys, you know, who don't comb their hair. It's kind of sloppy, and he's not a television face. And when you saw him sometimes during the campaign, he'd be drinking coffee in his L.L. Bean outfits with his rubber-soled shoes or his sweatpants. And it was so refreshing to see that. It just was. He just was a regular guy in many ways, a brilliant guy. But he didn't have all that other stuff that we associate with television people sometimes.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. I think, you know, even though he worked in television and had such an important role in network news, I have to be honest, he did not seem like a television guy to me.
No.
And it was sort of like, oh, he just happened to be on television.
Right.
He had all of these thoughts and all of his knowledge that he shared with us on television, but he never really seemed like a guy who was on television.
Saying.
So, and that was, I think, part of his charm. And I think he understood that. He wasn't going to be the best-looking news guy in America. And that was okay with him.
Yeah.
It was okay.
Yeah, it was okay with me, too. I liked it. Dave from Green Bay. Hi, Dave.
Hi. One of the things, talking about the Barack Obama campaign, now, Barack was born, I think, in 1961, which was the year that JFK won his campaign. And I think there's some interesting parallels between 1960s campaign of JFK. You know, he was a young, energetic Democrat, and the contrast was an old Republican war hero. Where, you know, Eisenhower was in power, and also, you know, Goldwater was, you know, similarly, you know, the kind of the contrasting candidate. So you had young against old, and you know, someone who was JFK, of course, was a war hero in his own right, but perhaps not of the luster of Goldwater. And then you had you know, a sense of a drifting America, and you know, kind of aimless, and that. And so Eisenhower was not generating much excitement. And Kennedy said, "We can do more." That was one of his campaign, you know, issues. And he also said, "Let's get America moving again." So he was some excitement. Because people were perceiving that there was a stagnant economy. Another issue that's kind of interesting in the religious area is that there was an issue he would be the first Catholic president. You know, would the Pope be in charge of national policy?
Mm-hmm.
It seems kind of ludicrous today, but that was really an issue in those days. And so there's been this theme of, you know, using religion against Obama. You know, that was used in the primary against him. So I think there's a number of interesting issues. There was also not necessarily an active war because it was a Cold War era, but the Cold War certainly was a huge issue in the election because JFK also raised the issue of a missile gap. And so, especially with so so many post-World War II veterans, the sense that we might have to go to war again and that we would be behind, that also was a sense of trying to mobilize things, mobilize concern about it. And, it was kind of, the perception was, well, the administration was kind of complacent and there was a status quo. And so, here again we have kind of a status quo versus change. So I think there are some significant parallels between the campaign of 1960 and, of course, JFK prevailed because people found that all those things resonated with their concerns.
Mm-hmm. Mike?
I think there are clearly some parallels. And I think even the age.
Right.
A lot of people talk about Obama's youth, but the fact is I think if he were to become president, I think he'd be 47 when he's sworn in. I think JFK was, 43?
Mm-hmm.
I think Bill Clinton was 46. So he would not clearly be the youngest president. But I think it is – I think the caller's point is well taken. I think there are some of the same things happening in this campaign in terms of excitement amongst certain groups of voters who have not even gone to the polls in any great numbers. Young folks, and that's been an interesting phenomenon in this campaign, young folks have just not been terribly engaged in presidential politics over the last several elections. And if the primaries are any basis for judgment in this case, that may change this time mm-hmm. around. So I think there is this sort of youthful enthusiasm, and there are some other parallels that I think the caller points out that do make this one of those campaigns that will make a few of us harken back to,
right.
the early 60s.
You know, and the age thing, you don't want to harp on it because you want to think people are vital and they can be vital. And we all know people who are vital when they're 92, 93 years old. But the Times had an interesting article about this yesterday in which mm-hmm. they talked about the fact that age is of bigger concern for people who are older because they feel that they've slowed down somewhat in their lives. And so they're more reluctant to embrace a candidate who's how old is he? 71?
71. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found that article interesting, too. And I think it is – this is a very interesting part of the campaign. The Obama campaign last week used some language in describing some of John McCain's comments about the situation in Iraq and American troops and comments like confused.
Yes.
Yes. And that's a very fine line. And I think their campaign is going to have to be careful with that. They have done that in the past where those are the sorts of words that are being used to describe John McCain when he was in Iraq on a previous visit. He misspoke and that was pounced on as saying, well, again, does he really – does he have a clear idea of what's going on in Iraq, or is he confused? And I think, that becomes, for some people, that becomes an age issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can push that issue too far.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, a lot of the boomers are not too far away from 71 themselves now.
No.
I mean, the front end of that is, I think, at about 62 now. And so you have to be a little careful in how you say that. So I think that's something that'll be interesting to see. The whole issue, we talk so much about the issue of race, and we've talked a lot about the issue of gender, but I do think age is an important issue.
We got it all this election, huh?
Yeah, it's
fascinating. All here.
I know.
Mike O'Shea is our guest. We'll welcome more phone calls in a moment at 800-486-8655, 414-227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. After the news from National Public Radio at the top of the hour, we will be talking about the airline industry. Back to phone calls from Mike O'Shea, and we go to Donna from Round Lake. Hi, Donna.
Good morning, Kathleen and Mike.
Hi, Donna.
It's a great show.
Thank you.
One of the things that came up very early in the discussion today was whether or not they thought that Senator Clinton's voters were coming back to the DNC. And I'm one of her supporters, mm-hmm. and I'm not inclined to come back. And you also talked about how did Obama beat her. To me, it's not a win. It wasn't a blowout. The numbers were certainly not very much better than Bush and Gore and Bush and Kerry. Some of my concerns with Obama is that they keep talking about experience like it's a bad thing. It's not. It's a good thing. And I happen to be an Illinois voter. And the campaign was They made it, Obama's guys were trying to say that experience wasn't good. It is a good thing. My particular concerns with him are his friends. We know what friends of a president, what kind of an influence they can have on an administration. And some of the things that, I mean, Obama has come out and said that Reverend Wright was his friend and that Flager was his friend. To me, friends are somebody you have over at a barbecue. People that express themselves in that manner, it's, you know, they've got freedom to say whatever they want, but that's not somebody who I would want advising me or even hanging out with my kids. And he never condemned what they said. He said it was divisive and destructive. That's all very obvious. And then also with the experience thing, being an Illinois voter, I'm one of the ones that voted to put him in the Senate for Illinois. And I have just been so disappointed. Instead of, he votes present on issues, or he doesn't vote. There's any place where he made a commitment, his commitments were pretty much the same as Senator Clinton's. She's got experience. You want change in the White House? Put a woman there. So thank you for listening.
All right. Thanks very much for the call.
I think I don't think that is an atypical sentiment. There are a number of people, many of them public officials, who backed Hillary Clinton here in Wisconsin, for instance, and who are now firmly on board and behind Barack Obama. But I do think there are people, just as our last caller appears to be one of them, who do have reservations about the Obama nomination. And I will say this. I think when she talked about his friends, and I guess everybody can define what a friend is or isn't differently, but I do think that will be a significant issue in the fall campaign. I think you will see the whole question of his patriotism being part of the fall campaign, and the connections to you know, whether it's William Ayers or whether it's Reverend Wright or whether it's Father Michael Flager or whatever. That will be a part of the campaign. Will it be John McCain raising them? I don't know. I think he may talk about, you know, his distaste for some of the comments of a Reverend Wright, which he has actually in the past. But I think you'll see more surrogates raising that as an issue. Is Obama a patriot? Mm-hmm. And I know people who support Barack Obama will say that's ridiculous. That's a non-issue. But I think it will be part of the campaign.
I do,
whether you agree with it, whether it is or it isn't, it will be part of the campaign.
Yep, I agree. Stephen is next from Cornucopia. Hi, Stephen.
Hi. Amidst the positive eulogizing for Tim Russert, I guess I'm reminded of an incident of the opposite, and that would be his interview with Howard Dean a week after his famous scream. Russert played that scream. He played it again. He played it again. He must have played it four or five times in Dean's face. And he just sat there and, it was just the meanest interview I can recall seeing on TV. Hmm. That kind of lost it for me with him.
Well, I think, I don't need to defend the decision to do that. I think that what happens in television sometimes. I think probably if you were to have asked Tim Russert years after that, he might have a different take on it. You do a lot of shows. I can speak to that. I did an interview show for 17 years, and I can assure you that not all the decisions I made and all the questions I asked were necessarily the right ones. You do the best you can, and that was probably pretty much in your face and a little harsh, especially my guess is probably you like the Dean candidacy and were disappointed with how it turned out and thought the media paid too much attention to that. And I know there were others like that. Hard to say. Unfortunately, that's part of television, too. And television is fascinated by those kinds of moments.
Yeah. So do you plan to interview the presidential candidates? Are you working on such a program?
Yeah, one of the things we're doing is either we're trying to do that every time they come through the state. We're trying to set up interviews with them, and we hope that we can continue to do that. We expect both of them to be here a fair amount between now and November, and so we want to do that. Also, reporters from the station at Channel 12, WISN-TV, some of the political reporters are seeing them in the field. My disappointment so far has been the unwillingness to go beyond a five-minute window that you get with a candidate.
Right.
We'll give you 5 minutes.
Okay.
And we've made the offer since our show is aired around the state. We've said, we'll do the whole half hour.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get beyond, you know, the five-minute cutoff point, because it's pretty hard to get into a great deal of depth when you're cut off after 5 minutes. So I would love to see that, and we'll be pushing for that in the weeks and months ahead.
Yeah, good. I like to see you do that, too. That's good. All right, Mike, thank you so much for coming in.
It's great to see you again.
Great to
see
you.
It's been a little too long.
I know.
It's wonderful to see you.
Thanks.
Continued success.
Yeah. Mike Ushay, and you can see his show on Sunday morning at 9 o'clock. Is it at 9 o'clock all over the state or different times?
No, it's it's 9 o'clock in Milwaukee. At other times around the state. And we also, I will say, we rebroadcast our show at 11 p.m. here in Milwaukee. So for those of you who... you know, aren't around and going to church or whatever, you can watch us later that evening, too.
Good. Or you just put that tape thing on, one of the best inventions.
It's the technology.
That's terrific. Mm-hmm. Mike is, I love this title, Distinguished Fellow in Law and Public Policy at Marquette University. He's the contributing anchor and reporter for WISN Television in Milwaukee and the host of the weekly Sunday morning program, Upfront, with Mike Ushay, joining us for All Things Political this Monday. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the program. Thanks to John Anderson, our new intern for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. Sorry we didn't get to all of the emails. We just didn't have time. News ahead and then more to come on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.